Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Gregory Stockel tells us about classes starting in the United States, but how international students are failing to get visas. Jill Robbins tells us how to garden when you have too much water. Then an arts and culture story from Alice Bryant. She tells us about Josephine Baker. I will return with this week's words and their stories. John Russell talks about how llama antibodies could help in the fight against the coronavirus. We will hear another story from Jill Robbins, this time from Kenya. People there are making cooking fuel from plant waste. But first, here is the education report.
Kofi Owusu's classes at Villanova University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, are about to start this Monday. But his in-person meeting at the United States Embassy in Accra, Ghana, for a student visa is still 9 months away. It is the second time that Owusu will not make it to the U.S. in time for school. I think they should just open up the system, said Owusu. He told Reuters, they are operating on a rather limited schedule. So I think they can broaden it and give students priority. The U.S. requires an in-person interview for international students to get a visa. Educational support groups say students find it difficult to get an appointment since the embassies are operating with fewer workers during the health crisis. This has left some foreign students unable to get to the U.S. for the start of the school year. And the educational groups are now calling for the U.S. to drop in-person interviews or conduct them online. A U.S. State Department spokesperson said students should start the visa process early. He added that the department considers appointments for students first and speeds up the process as needed. Last year, the U.S. permitted embassy officers to drop required in-person interviews to help visa processing slowed by the pandemic. Students renewing their visas within a year before it ends are not required to meet in person through December 2021. The Institute of International Education, or IIE, said new international student enrollment in the United States dropped 43% in the autumn of 2020 from the year before. The drop came after months of pandemic restrictions around the world. The organization, however, found that the real number of new students who made it to the U.S. in person fell 72%. IIE numbers show the United States has had over 1 million international students each year since the 2015 to 2016 school year. The weight and the difficulty threaten both America's standing as a place for international students and the money they bring into the country. The amount is estimated to be $40 billion each year to the universities and local communities. NAFSA is a non-profit group of international educators. Its research found that even before COVID, the U.S. visa process was one of the top three reasons for falling international student numbers between 2017 and 2019. The U.S. social and political environment and competition from other countries' universities were the other two. Ravi Shankar is the director of the International Services Office at the University of Rochester in New York. He named Canada, Britain, and China as the top U.S. competitors for international students. Shankar said, "We live in danger of losing talent. Other Western countries make it easier for international students to study there." Owusu said, "I have been to school in the UK." He added, "I didn't go through the stress of seeking for an interview." Sarah Spreitzer is the Director of Government Relations at the American Council on Education. She said she thinks the U.S. government is trying to be a more welcoming United States. This year, American universities received 13% more applications from international students than from the year before. The numbers came in from Common App, which students use to apply to colleges yearly. Suwadi Paython is a student at the Savannah College of Art and Design in Georgia. She considers herself lucky to have secured an appointment in June at the U.S. Embassy in Yangon, Myanmar. She waited more than 3 hours for her 10-minute meeting. Paython believes the meeting could have been done online instead of in person. She said, "It's just that one interview that's keeping everyone from going to the States." I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thanks, Gregory. Now, here is Jill Robbins.
Unusual weather this summer has hurt many gardens in the United States. For many, the problem is not enough rain. For others, it is too much. In some gardens, water sits on the surface of the ground, or the ground stays wet for hours after rain stops. The best action, then, is to move the garden to a place where the water will drain better. Oh, do you want to keep your garden where it is? Then you should plant yellow flag iris, sweet flag, marshmallow, marsh marigold, and other plants that like soft, wet soils. Do you still want to grow tomatoes, roses, and marigolds in that sunny place? It can be done, but you have to get some air into the soil. That is, provide for water drainage so the roots of these plants can breathe. We will look at three ways you can correct the problem of too much water. You can use one or all three in the same garden. One way is to drain the water away to some lower location. The simplest way is with a ditch, or, if your garden is large, a few ditches. You will also, of course, need the ditch to drain onto lower ground. The more clay in the soil, the more ditches are needed to drain off the water. A drainage ditch does not have to be large, just 8 to 10 centimeters. The deeper the ditch, the greater the depth of well-aerated soil that results. So dig at least 15 centimeters deep. A gradual decline along the length of any ditch, about 15 centimeters per 30.5 meters, keeps water flowing downhill. Ditches crossing your garden need not be unpleasant to look at or troublesome. Picture a garden in which flat stones line ditches and form bridges across ditches that cross paths. The whole system can be a beautiful water feature. These waterways may look like a classic Persian garden. The Persian garden, however, uses the long, narrow waterways to bring water to the plants, not take it away. Another way to drain away water, without changing the appearance of your garden, is to bury pipes with small holes underground. Dig a ditch, as described above, then lay in black pipe that is about 10 centimeters across its width. Available at home and building stores, the pipe is made to bend easily, and the holes in it let in water. Cover the pipe with a fabric that water can pass through to keep out dirt and a layer of small stones, then replace the soil. Place the pipe so water in it will flow to a lower area. Make sure the lower end of the pipe is either open or lays on a group of small stones. A third way to give your plants more air is to raise them above the water. Trees and shrubs can be planted on raised piles of soil, often called beds. The beds need to be wide enough to allow roots to spread. How wide depends on the eventual size of the plant. If you want a bigger plant, give its roots more room to grow. For vegetables and flowers, raised beds provide well-aerated soil. To make a raised bed, build a box at least 15 centimeters high of wood or stone. You should be able to reach into the middle of the box without standing in it. Remove grass from the inside area and add a layer of flattened boxes or old newspapers to prevent unwanted growth. To avoid unwanted plants, fill it with the kind of mix you would use for growing in a container. The higher the surface of the bed, the greater the depth of well-drained soil for the roots. A grouping of raised beds, as well as the materials used for their sides and the paths, might make you think of medieval Europe. It will look even more like a classic European garden if the edging is of wood, with small, rounded, cream-colored stones for the paths. Or form the beds with rough-cut logs and lay crushed rocks on the paths, and you might instead imagine yourself riding up on a horse to enter this colonial American garden. You could be like the Aztec gardeners near a lake outside of Mexico City. They took the wet soil from between their planting beds to keep them raised. plant plenty of marigolds, a favorite flower of the Aztecs, to create a similar garden. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thanks, Jill. Next is Alice Bryant.
The remains of American-born singer and dancer Josephine Baker will soon be reburied in the historic Pantheon building in Paris. Baker, who is a World War II hero in France, will be the first Black woman to get the country's highest honor. The official home of French President Emmanuel Macron confirms the ceremony will be on November 30th at the Pantheon. Scientist Marie Curie, thinker Voltaire, and writer Victor Hugo, and other respected French people are buried at the Pantheon. After Baker's death in 1975, she was buried in Monaco, a city-state to the south of France. She was clothed in French military wear with the medals she got for her work in the French Resistance. The French Resistance was a group of French men and women who fought the Nazi occupation of France during World War II. Baker was born in the city of St. Louis, in the U.S. state of Missouri. She moved to France in 1925 to flee racism and segregation in the United States. She became a well-known singer and performer. Baker became famous in France for her banana skirt dances. She performed to crowds at Théâtre des Champs-Élysées and later at the Folies Bergères in Paris. She became a French citizen after her marriage to industrialist Jean Lion in 1937. During World War II, Baker joined the French Resistance. Her missions included collecting information from German officials that she met at parties. She carried messages hidden in her clothing to England and other countries. She used her fame to travel without being searched. Baker was also a civil rights activist in the United States. She was among the official speakers at the March on Washington in 1963. The march is where civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his "I Have a Dream" speech. Baker will be only the fifth woman to be honored with a Pantheon burial. She will also be the first performer honored. I'm Alice Bryant.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore terms and expressions in the English language. And today, we talk about a word that will help you talk about the best of times. That word is heyday. If you are in your heyday, you are in your prime. You are at the peak of your abilities. You are having your best days ever. Some people had their heydays when they were young, maybe in college or high school. They consider themselves past their prime. They might talk about those past experiences only and not plan for new experiences in the future. These people might be stuck in their glory days, Other things besides people can have a heyday. If you are at the pinnacle of success, you could say your career is having a heyday. Also, a place, like a city, can have a heyday. And so can an industry. For example, I grew up in the Rust Belt of West Virginia. In its heyday, my hometown was known for its steel industry. In fact, every man in my family worked in the steel mills. But when the industry shrank, the steel factory jobs disappeared. The city fell on hard times, and today is still trying to recover. However, many other parts of West Virginia are having a tourism heyday because of the beautiful natural environment. So where does the word heyday come from? Some word experts say that it first appeared in English in the 16th century as an interjection. An interjection is a word or cry, such as ouch, that expresses a sudden or strong feeling. So heyday was used to express extreme happiness or wonder. Around the same time, heyday was also used as a noun, meaning high spirits. Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary says it was not until the 18th century that the word was used to mean the period when one's achievement, or popularity, has reached its zenith. Usually, we use heyday in the singular form. Saying the plural, heydays, is a little less common. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. John Russell brings us our next story.
Llama antibodies could soon be playing a part in the worldwide fight against COVID-19 if tests being done by a Belgian company live up to their early results. Researchers from the VIB Jugend Center for Medical Biotechnology in Ghent say antibodies taken from a llama named Winter have reduced the spread of coronavirus infections, including variants, in laboratory testing. Dominique Tersago is chief medical officer of Exavir, a company that works with VIB Jugend. Tersago described the technology as a possible game changer, which means something that has a big, good effect on a situation. The technology's aim is to help rather than replace vaccines. It could possibly be used to help protect people with weaker immune systems and treat infected people in hospitals. Unusually small, llama antibodies are able to attach or bind to part of the virus's protein spike. Tersago said, "At the moment, we're not seeing mutations of a high frequency anywhere near where the binding site is." The antibodies also showed strong neutralization activity against the highly infectious Delta variant, she added. Neutralization means to stop something from being effective or harmful. Researchers expect tests in healthy volunteers to be similarly effective. The tests began last week in partnership with Belgian pharmaceutical company UCB. Along with other llamas and members of the camel family, Winter produces antibodies that are smaller easier to reproduce, and have more uses than those of other mammals, said VIB Jugend group leader Xavier Salin. Their small size allows them to reach targets, reach parts of the virus that are difficult to access with conventional antibodies, he said. Conventional means common, ordinary, or usual. The current research follows studies from 2016 into llama antibodies to help deal with the SARS and MERS coronaviruses. France's Sanofi paid $4.6 billion for Ablynx, a Ghent-based medical company that does llama antibody research, in 2018. Winter, whose antibodies can now be reproduced in the lab, is enjoying retirement in a private art and animal park in Genk. I'm John Russell.
Now, here is Jill Robbins.
A project in Kenya is using biogas technology to attack two major pollution problems with one device. A machine that changes waste, such as invasive water hyacinth, into cleaner cooking fuel. Biogas International, a Kenyan energy technology company, is partnering with drug maker AstraZeneca and the Institute for Sustainability Leadership at the University of Cambridge. The project has so far provided 50 of the flexi biogas devices to homes in the city of Kisumu in western Kenya. The device is called a digester because it breaks down plant waste to produce gas. The digesters will permit families to stop using wood or charcoal, both of which produce dangerous smoke. People will also be able to cook foods faster using the gas. Tony Otieno used the gas from a digester to cook tea for his 70-year-old grandmother, Margaret. He said,
"The gas has no smoke, it has no smell, then it is much faster than the jiko."
Some of the families received a gas stove as part of the project to replace their jiko, a stove that uses charcoal. Many of the digesters were also given out for free. The company paid the cost. The machines process plant waste, such as ground-up water hyacinth. That plant has covered large parts of Lake Victoria, a freshwater lake between Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. The weed-like plant harms living things in the lake, including fish. The plants also help bacteria and mosquitoes increase, causing health risks to local communities. The flexi-biogas devices use 2 to 3 kilograms of water hyacinth scraped from the lake to produce gas. After the plant waste produces gas, it can be put on other plants as food. The owner of the device can sell extra gas or plant waste. The fuel powers a stove that can make a meal of corn and beans in around 4 hours. Dominic Wanjihia Kuhumbu is head of Biogas International. He added that the elderly people are being harmed by their cooking fuel. Instead, he believes they should all have the cleaner biogas. But at a cost of $650, most families in the city do not have enough money to buy the device, he said. The World Bank put the gross domestic product per person in Kenya at just over $1,800 in 2020. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thanks, Jill. And that brings us to the end of our program. Some of the content for this program came from the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. Thanks to those reporters. Don't forget to join us again tomorrow for another 30 minutes of learning English with stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.